Well, hey, everybody, it's me, Kevin Stevenson, and you're joining me again, of course, on I Don't Care with me, Kevin Stevenson. Glad to have you. Just wanted to remind you, you know, every now and then I get people ask me, why is it called I Don't Care with Kevin? And they say, you know, it's kind of flippant. I said, well, okay, here's the deal. I've been in healthcare for 36 years, been a hospital exec for a number of those years. But fortunately for our patients, I don't provide any care because I honestly never wanted to be a physician. You know, I've told you time and time again in the past, I don't like pain, needles, or blood. And so that probably wouldn't have worked out very well for me in medical school. But the business side of healthcare, I really enjoy. And I really enjoy, you know, certainly being called to help people, oftentimes at their worst time. And so it came about, my old producer of the podcast back early on said, hey, Kevin, I've got a name for the show. We said, okay, what do you think? He goes, well, you don't provide patient care, right? I said, of course not. You know that. He goes, how about I Don't Care? And I said, perfect. So that's where I Don't Care came from. It's not that I don't care about you, my audience. It's not about that I don't care about my patients. It's just that I just don't care. Now you get it. Okay. Just a reminder. Need to bring that up. So today I have a guest on, and I'm going to tell you right now, we're going to take a little detour. We're going to talk college football. And I think I found my match and somebody who can talk as much as I do. Today's guest is Carl Schuessler. He's the managing principal of Mitigate Partners. He's wearing red because he's a Georgia Bulldog too. And we did a little pre-call. Every now and then I'll do those. And, Carl and I, you know, we really both relish the fact, and most of my audience, you know, I'm a Baylor Bear, you know, and so sick of Bears. And, Carl and I were both reveling in the fact that his alma mater, the Georgia Bulldogs, beat, the hated University of Texas Longhorns. And so, Carl, number one, welcome to I Don't Care. Number two, thank you for the beatdown last weekend.
Well, thanks for having me, Kevin. And, don't throw me in that briar patch on college football. So we might not get out of it for a while. But yeah, it
was very
enjoyable. The first game was a lot better to walk into their backyard and whip them like a bunch of mules. That was a lot of fun. Last game was a lot closer on Saturday, but yeah, it was for a lot more important title, the SEC champion. So it's a big deal down south where I am from, and I think beating the number one and two team and being Texas both times was fun. And somebody goes, you know, I don't want to play somebody twice, right? You know, they always say, well, I'm saying, let's play them three times. Let's play one more time. And that nothing could get any better than to take them to the woodshed one more time. But we'll see if we get there. We're not that great. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, Carl, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, my Baylor Bears a few years ago got to experience a beatdown of our own by the Georgia Bulldogs in the Sugar Bowl. And I'll tell you the funniest thing, my tickets for that game were in the end zone. And so I'm looking up the field, I'm watching the game, and we've got the ball and our offense is coming at us. And I look up there and this was the first time Georgia sets their defense. And I'm like, where's our offense? Because I couldn't see him because every one of your guys looked like they were like 6'6", weighed about 350 pounds. And, you know, we were a little cocky going into the game. Because we heard, hey, there's like 15 or 16 Georgia players that opted out because they're going to get drafted. And I'm thinking, you know, we might have a chance. And then some Georgia fans, we were talking about it, and they said, you do know that our second and third string are five stars too. I said, you know, I forgot about that. And so, but I learned about that pretty quickly at the end of that game. So,
That was it too, Kevin. After that, and then Texas did beat us in that Sugar Bowl one time. And that was when Kirby said, we're not doing this anymore. You're either in or you're out. And if you don't, we're not doing all this. And what I thought was so cool about culture, and I'm sure we'll talk about a lot of stuff, culture and what Kirby's built at Georgia, it's like the Florida State game, 12 of them kids sacked because, you know, they didn't win. They didn't get to play a national title. Yeah. We can argue back and forth on that. But, this year was a whole different story for them. But the fact of the matter was all our guys, who there were two or three first-rounders, they all played. Yeah. They didn't sit out when they could have. I mean, sure. The game didn't mean anything because, you know, it meant something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think the culture is important, and that was really the difference. And I'm seeing more and more of these kids sticking out. Ole Miss has got a bunch of kids saying they're going to play, which is good. I mean, this whole thing is just crazy. And I was a big fan of RG3, by the way.
Thank you. He's a good guy, good kid, great ambassador for the Bears. So, well, Carl, tell my audience a little bit about Mitigate Partners and how it came about.
All right, I'll do my best. How much time do I have? I'll keep it tight. Mitigate Partners was formed, I think it was about four or five years ago, and it really came about. I was speaking around the country at different events, healthcare related events. And we were doing a lot of things. People said, I really like what you're about, what you're talking about. And so a friend of mine in Valdosta, Georgia, which is South Georgia, who was kind of working with us, he was an Allstate agent. His name's Barry Broome. But he came up with the idea of Mitigate Risk. Why not call it Partners? And, you know, it's an independent alliance of about right now, currently 27 benefit advisors stretching from, up in the Massachusetts area all the way to Nevada. And people, we felt that why not collaborate versus compete and try to beat each other's brains in? It's a competitive business. And we kind of said, well, 1 + 1 = 20, you know. So we work together on a lot of stuff and band together a lot, and we share ideas. And I think when you're, you know, the old proverbs, iron sharpens iron, I think you're better. And, for example, we were trying to work with Texas Public Policy Foundation in Austin. And I was brought in and I said, hey, I got two mitigators in Austin, and they knew some things in their market I didn't know. So it's pretty valuable when you can do that. And we wanted to marry it with local management, meaning people that are boots on the ground. So we cover a decent amount of ground. We got a lot of people in the South, but that's what it is. It's just a group of independent alliance of benefit advisors who are totally independent, fiercely independent. I wish they listened to me, but they don't.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, that's an area that I don't know a great deal about, but you know, I do know that, you know, I spent some time on a school board up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and every year we dealt with significant cost increases for our employee benefits, and you know, I mean, limited resources, you know, you're dependent upon the state, you're dependent upon the taxpayer. And so you try to be good stewards of that. And so, you know, talk to me in the audience a little bit about, you know, what are the things that, you know, the main things that you're trying to do to reduce those costs, and how do you go about that? How do you target that with your individual client or your group of clients? That's just something that I think you've got a great opportunity to really help folks.
Okay. Well, no, I'll do my best, Kevin. I think the easiest way to sum this up is several things. So just quickly, we identified what we call the 6 deficiencies of legacy healthcare insurance. Mm-hmm. And I'll call them out real quick, assuming I can remember. I don't remember what I had for lunch, but I'm going to do my best. But number one, deficiency number one, was embedded conflicts of interest, i.e. the cartel. And we can talk about what that means. I'm not going to go into all the detail on that right now. But number two was a lack of quality and pricing transparency. Where in the world do we go and shop for anything that we don't know the price until 30 days later? We would never buy a car without knowing the price. Yet we go into facilities and things across the country not knowing what it costs. So that's number two. Number three was what we deemed medical billing errors. A lot of back in 2015 when our country decided to go from ICD-9s to ICD-10 codes, pretty tough on hospitals and so forth. So a lot of the billing that comes out, around close to 99% of those bills could be wrong and inaccurate. And it's because it's so complex. And so the medical billing errors was number three. Number four was the traditional PPO discount game. That's basically the insurance companies getting together with facilities, hospitals, doctors saying, hey, you bill out at X and we'll get a discount off of it. You'll like a hero and we'll like a hero. So that's a traditional PPO discount game. Number five was the pharmaceutical shell game. And you ever seen that guy that moves the shells around it?
Yeah.
100% of that. And then lastly, number six was lack of information and data. You can't, if you can't manage that, which you can't measure. And getting data from insurance companies and other people, it's your data, but you can't get it. It's very difficult. So out of all of that, what we decided, we kind of coined a few phrases. We call that kind of insurance insurer-built healthcare, what I just described.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can fix those six deficiencies, we turn them into the six opportunities in healthcare. And that's where we came up with this term called employer-built healthcare. Okay. Built for the employer, for the employer, not built for the insurance company. Also, I would take that and say Wall Street-built healthcare versus Main Street-built healthcare. And our goal was to get the money off Wall Street and get it out back on Main Street. And we do it by disintermediating the system and eliminating a lot of the middles and the middleman. And that's what we did. And so we also, with Employer Built, were able to, we call it actively managed plans because you can actively manage it. We built the Fair Cost Health Plan and people use other plans there where they can manage their risk instead of relying on the insurance company who is supporting their stock price on Wall Street.
Yeah.
You know, to do that. And that's, and again, let me be clear. They're not doing anything wrong, Kevin. They're not going to fiduciary responsibility to the stockholder.
Yeah.
And, you know, shame on me for not buying stock in all those insurance companies who's, you know, were up 1,000% since March 2010 when Obamacare, Affordable Care Act came into existence. I mean, they have knocked it out of the park. But unfortunately, there's an employer on the other side of that that is getting killed. These employees that work there are basically functionally uninsured, meaning their deductibles and their out-of-pockets are so high, they're scared to death to use their health insurance. So they're functionally uninsured, even though they got insurance.
Okay. Okay. So, yeah, talk to me a little bit. I mean, you were sharing before we started recording. Talk to me a little bit about how, you know, you worked with, there was one large, school district down in Florida that you were able to save quite a bit of money for. I mean, I'd love, you know, for you to share that story because it goes back to, you know, being a good fiduciary, having a good responsibility over that school district, but also saving a lot of people a lot of money.
Right. You know, and you mentioned you were involved with school board. I mean, you know how highly political, bureaucratic those organizations are. It was a great learning experience. I stepped away in April of 21. We got hired in April of 19. But the story kind of goes, we met before the group ever did what's called an invitation and negotiate. Many people that are listening might think of an RFP. It's similar, but it's an invitation to negotiate. And we had laid some groundwork and met with them before we ever answered it. Because if we answered it, they're going to hire the people that got the most windows. By the way, I got six windows in my office, so I feel like I'm doing pretty good. But most people, you know, they're going to hire the big boys, the Aon, the Gallagher, the Towers Watson, all the big ones, Marsh, Mercer. And that's what they generally do. But because they knew a little bit about us, we were able to answer and have an opportunity to win and partner with another group as well. And so we won, and I think it was in August of 20, we fired Cigna the spring of 20. In August of 20, they put in our Fair Cost Health Plan. They don't call it that, but that's what they put in. And they basically fired Cigna. Cigna proceeded to sue them, and then they sued Cigna, and some things have just been settled, I think. But public record, I'm not going to comment on it. But anyway, long story short, by eliminating Cigna, by eliminating their PBM, which they own, you know, they were allowed to merge. The DOJ allowed them to merge with Express Scripts. They went from 65 in the Fortune 500 to number 13. They jumped 52 spots.
Yeah.
They were 65. Jumped 50. DOJ didn't allow it. Did you just read Kroger and Albertson are not going to be able to merge?
Yeah.
Saying it's monopolistic or what? So anyway, we could go on and on about vertical integration. Anyway, long story short, by kicking all those to the curb, and that did draw the ire of the CEO. He got on a plane and flew down, tried to get school district to change their mind. So it's a pretty interesting story. So when people challenge me on my cartel word, I tell them they better pack a breakfast, lunch, and dinner and come on down. And I got a few stories for them because they don't really understand what's going on behind the scenes. But anyway, long story short, by doing that, in 5 short years, the school district saved about $65 million already. And the teachers have saved around $15 million out of pocket.
Well, that's great.
Significant, because when we looked at the 10-year history, Kevin, of looking at Cigna stock price and the premiums, when you added it all up over a 10-year period, they hadn't had a raise in 10 years. Ate it up. And it's been quite significant. Think about the investment in education, art programs, music programs, all that stuff in a fairly, you know, more poorer county down there. But yeah. And so that was one. And we've done a lot with other, we work with a hospital. I don't know if you knew that, the Southern Memorial Hospital down in Arcadia, Florida. I didn't know what the heck that was until Dr. Lee Groves, the direct primary care doctor, brought us on board, and they saved 1.2 million or 54% the first year. And they were with one of the cartel members. Since we're, well, one-on-one, I can usually say it, but this is going to be public. I'll leave it out. But got rid of them, and 157 employees, and say 1.2 million or 54% in 1 year.
Wow.
1 year by getting rid of those middlemen.
That's incredible.
But we built plans where people can get care, remove barriers, care. So they're encouraged to take care of themselves, not worried what it's going to cost. And if you hear and watch any of those videos that Patient Rights Advocate Cynthia Fisher and her team shot that were showed to President Trump that got Hospital Price and Transparency passed, Act passed in 21, that was the videos of our clients and others. They heard what we were doing. I'm glad to share those and put them in, you know, later to you. But that was what was amazing. One of the employees said, you know, for the hospital said, you know, before I was worried, I got a deductible, I got this out of pocket, I got this coinsurance. I can't afford to take care of myself. This year, I got diagnosed with cancer, and I took care of everything, and it cost me absolutely nothing. And the hospital saved 1.2 million or 54% in 1 year.
Wow. That's incredible. Hey, so the person that kind of put us together, Dr. Kristen Dickerson, was a guest of mine probably about a year ago now, with Green Imaging down in Houston. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, how you're basically working to unbundle, you know, healthcare, and then really trying to place people, in different settings where they can get high quality care, but it's also at a lower price. Yeah. Talk a little bit about
that. Sure. I think I will. And Dr. Dickerson is one of my favorites. Dr. Dixon, if you're listening, go Dogs. Anyway.
She's a Bear. Stop that.
I know, but she's a Longhorn too. Trust me.
Yeah, I know.
Go look. But anyway, I think it's important, Kevin. One of the things I didn't say about employer built versus insurer built, when you're doing an insurer built plan, the patient is out here and a target for profit by all the cartel members. And when you do employer built, we build a patient-centric plan and architect a plan that works for the employer and bring the patient back in the middle. So the reason I wanted to say that is healthcare is siloed off in so many places. Healthcare is not national. It's not regional. It's local. And we had to relocalize it. And like I said, get it off Wells Street, bring it back to Main Street. And that's what we did. So we were frustrated with the system when we were looking, trying to find a way to build the right plan. We went out and just started talking to a lot of cost containment solutions that would help save employers money. And we talk about our health plan like a house. Think about a house full of bricks. Each brick is a cost containment solution. And we seamlessly integrated 25 or so solutions in the Fair Cost Health Plan and brought them together and have a platform where all of them communicate with the employer and take care of the member. And I could tell you stories that will make you cry, especially during COVID, of what we were able to do for employees that is just unbelievable. I'm just very blessed to have all these great partners, Dr. Dickerson being one of them. She saved the school district, believe the first year was like 1.2 million, I think. Next year, 2.2. She saved them. It's in the books about what she saved. and so forth. So she's a great partner. And again, that's eliminating another middle and finding a good solution. And it's been great.
That's great. Well, you know, the fact that you, you have the opportunity to be able to do that and build something that is, as you said, patient centric. And that's, that's whenever I first got into this business that, I wanted to make sure, that at the center of everything that I did and whatever organization I was a part of, that we were patient centric. And sometimes that gets a little hard whenever you get into large organizations, but, we've got to keep the patient at the forefront of everything that we do. And I'm proud to say, where I am now, that's what we try to do each and every day. But so in the last few minutes that we have, Carl, talk to my audience a little bit about how, give them maybe two or three tips. You're talking to a bunch of employers out there, give them two or three tips that, whether it's a solution that you can help them provide or maybe give them an idea of something to look for when they are seeking benefit solutions.
Yeah. I think the first thing is they need to find a benefits advisor. A lot of people refer to people like myself as brokers. And one of our mitigators in Austin, Texas, always coined the phrase, a broker makes you broker. And I'm like, man, that's genius. And yeah. So we would start by talking to people, well, your broker's making you broker. You need a benefits advisor, someone that's working for you. And we are paid directly by our clients, generally not by insurance companies. Mm-hmm. Because again, we bill if insurance company insured bill healthcare, it doesn't work the way it does. You're not going to save the kind of dollars we save and give the better care. Maybe sometimes get rid of prior authorizations or pre-certs. I know you guys love that at your place. I know that doesn't cost any money at all during the year.
No.
Waste any money or time. They're there to protect the plan, sponsor the employer, but there's a lot of them. We custom build plans and we waive them at certain places that do great procedures and are known for it. We don't have things pre-certed because it's not necessary on a lot of them. So find a good benefits advisor first and ask questions of them. What are they doing? Show examples of what you've done. So much of what people do, Kevin, is, and it was the same with the school district or anyone that does an RFP, is it's the capabilities presentation. So people are buying the windows. They're buying all the fancy objects they got. Yet most of the objects, could be an actuary or whatever it is, are never used.
Yeah.
Their health plan. But they're buying that. I would rather say, show me some examples of what you've done to make a difference for an employer and what they were spending and how did you give their members better health care? And that's the questions they ought to be asked. That's what matters. I mean, the rest of it's, a waste of time. And if they want to do that and keep doing it that way, then stay the way you are, but don't get mad when your rates go up.
Yeah.
When you actively manage a plan, it's work. And I want to be clear, and everybody knows it's work with me. And our clients have said it on stage numerous times. It's not easy. The first 6 months is like driving down your driveway with a speed bump every centimeter. Okay. It's bumpy. But all of them, when you ask them, if you had to do over again, what would you do differently? They all say, we wish we'd done this years ago. So There's a learning curve. It's not easy out of the gate. Nothing worthwhile is easy, is it? So, that's what I would say. So look at the benefit advisor you're talking to and ask them the question. Show me examples of what you've done and how you've lowered the cost of care for employers. And what have you done to remove barriers of care for their employees?
Okay. Very good. Well, Carl, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Love talking college football, but certainly love, talking to anybody that makes sure that they put patients first. So if one of my audience members would like to get a hold of you to get some more information about what Mitigate Partners does, how can they?
All right. A couple ways. I prefer the old Alexander Graham Bell way, Kevin. Just give me a holler, as I say, 404-277-7852. Or they can go to mitigatepartners.com and they can see all our advisors that are there. And then, of course, LinkedIn, Carl Schuessler, all that's there, Twitter. I think Mitigate's got an Instagram and a Facebook, but don't ask me. I know how to log in, but I don't know how to do it. But anyway, and I'm sure you'll share all that. But yeah, that's the best way is to call and email Carl at MitigatePartners.com.
That sounds great. Carl Schuessler, managing partner of Mitigate Partner, managing director of Mitigate
Principal.
Principal. Okay. Hey, it's been a pleasure talking to you, Carl. Thanks for joining me on Auto Care. And hey, audience members, thanks for joining me on Auto Care today. It's been a real pleasure. Look forward to seeing you again next week and take care.
Yeah. Kevin, thank you so much for the opportunity. I want to leave with two words. Well,
all right.
Four words. I'll say first, Merry Christmas, and the last two are Go Dogs, and that's DKWGS.
You know, I kind of figured you were going to say Go Dogs in there, so Merry Christmas to you too, Carl. Take care.
All right. Thank you, Kevin. Thanks for having me.